You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 113 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
And that intro felt awkward.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Because I'm now used to the intro for our side podcast, the first podcast from the Pelton Cast Network.
Yeah, you noticed that?
I like that a lot. If you see any reviews or ratings on Talkin' Taco Time, they are 100% from me.
Oh, no.
If you have not yet listened to episode number one of Talkin' Taco Time, two questions for you. What are you doing? Question number two, stop listening to this right now and go listen to Talkin' Taco Time.
I would actually say the opposite is Talkin' Taco Time turns out to be a lot more timeless, Talkin' Taco Timeless, than this podcast, which is a little could be dated by the time you listen to it because of the sports content in here. But you ask, what are you doing? Our friend of the pod, DJ Infrared, tweeted,
"Oh,
I'm really sitting here listening to a podcast about Taco Time. What is my life?" And of course, the answer is tweeted by Talkin' Taco Time, your best life.
Your best life!
Yeah.
Right?
So great feedback on the first episode of Talkin' Taco Time. People are voting in the poll. You've only got a few hours left. I don't know why I didn't make that longer than 24 hours, but I didn't.
You had to get that in right away. We don't even know when we were going to record episode two.
Yeah, it could be several months. I just really didn't think about it and didn't go back until later. And I was like, oh, damn, I made that only 24 hours.
Well, whatever. That poll, if I know which way it's going, will be the conclusive answer about whether Mexi fries are tater tots. And let me just say, voice of the people over here.
All right. I have nothing positive to say about
this. You have to admit it. But go listen to Talkin' Taco Time. It's fun, and it is probably the most informative podcast about Taco Time that has ever been released.
It's hard to dispute.
Has anybody commented on the intro music, by the way?
No.
Nobody's commented on it. To me, that's like, they pulled the whole thing together.
It really was something. I mean, to me, the logo pulls the whole thing together. We forgot to mention on the podcast, thanks to the famous Cousin Katie for the Talkin' Taco Time logo. Also, thanks to Taco Time for the Talkin' Taco Time. Mostly nope. Cousin Katie.
Just Katie. And also, thanks to Taco Time in 1976 for the intro music.
And which they continue to use, we know, at least through 1977. Unclear how much longer. We've seen ads for those 2 years,
1976 and 1977.
Anything more on Talkin' Taco Time?
I just really the oral and visual experience of it. I really enjoyed
the what visual experience?
Oral,
like AUIL.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, just the intro music and you know what? I often have told you least favorite podcast is the Pelton Cast. Often I say that.
That's true.
But now I'm going to decree most favorite podcast, Talkin' Taco Time.
I mean, I think I'm just excited because we have talked about this. We have conceived it for so long. And to bring it to fruition, it's like a child that we've delivered into the world. One of your 20 to 25 children.
The thing is, I know so much about delivering children. It's almost like we should add a third podcast to the network. Oh, no.
Well, that's when Trader Bros is the,
Trader Bros.
The third member of the Pelton Cast Network. All right, we ought to get to the beer. But I did want to confront you as we discussed the beer. Not confront you. I did want to
Every good Pelton Cast starts with a confrontation.
I did want to bring up a tweet you sent yesterday afternoon because it's relevant to the beer. You tweeted, I own a house, have three children and a career. Someday I'm going to be old enough to not use my mom's Subway Club card, but I'm not there yet. And I understand.
Safeway, not Subway.
Oh, yeah, Safeway. I'm sorry.
I had my own Subway Club card, good yeah. Sir. I collected those stamps for myself.
Oh, I missed the stamps. I assume that you had the same experience that I just had as I was purchasing this beer at Safeway, where you typed in our childhood, like our mom's like home phone number.
Where did it go?
It's not there anymore.
Where did
it
you
go? Figure out what it is?
Well, I just go with her cell phone number now.
Yeah, that works.
I like that we both pivoted to that.
I mean, like,
we pivoted from our childhood phone number. Like, see, to our mom's cell phone number.
See, I didn't really put this together with your tweet for a second. So, like, I typed it in a second time. I was like, did I get it wrong somehow?
No, I had that exact same experience.
This is great.
A couple times. And now I've trained myself. I mean, I go to Safeway often. It's the nearest grocery store. I mean, I've done this like 4 or 5 times. Should I have informed you? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, you did. You tweeted it. I just didn't internalize it.
I didn't really give the background context about
it. We have combined lived for almost 70 years between the two of us. And neither of us has our own Safeway Club card. And I have no plans to ever get my own Safeway Club card.
Do you have a Fred Meyer Club card?
No.
Okay, so both of us...
I mean, well, technically, I think I did have a QFC one at some point. I haven't used it in years.
You had
a
Kroger one? Both of us are closer to having a Fred Meyer-themed podcast than we are called Fred Meyer Admirers.
Yeah, it's such a great name.
Thanks to and congratulations to Josh Lindgren.
Yeah, big day for Josh.
And you know, he's a major podcast agent now, and for some reason, the call has not come to the Pelton Cast.
We are poorly represented at this point.
Pelton Cast Network Live. And you know, we just can't find a good agent.
It's true. No one who knows the business. Okay, should we talk?
Anyway. Did I say what the Fred Meyer podcast was called?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, Fred Meyer Admirers?
Yeah, you got that in there.
So anyway, both of us are closer to having a Fred Meyer themed podcast than we are to having a Fred Meyer club card.
Yeah, that's about right.
I had another our mom thought. This is a complete aside. It was just a thing about our mom that feels natural right now.
Okay.
So if you recall, 2 years ago for my birthday or Christmas, right? People demand that you ask for things for these events. And I asked for BoJack Horseman Funko Pop toys or whatever. So, and not even from our mom. These came from Mrs. Fantasy Genius. But our mom was aware that this happened. And since then, her response to this has not been to get me tons of BoJack Horseman stuff. It has been to get me endless amounts of Funko Pop toys of just characters that I have no interest in whatsoever. And I was imagining that this would happen. Just like, first off, her mentality about it is not like Tristan likes this TV show or whatever. It's that he likes these toys, like the medium. Right?
Yep.
That they're being delivered in. And I was imagining her like on her deathbed trying to give me like a Funko Pop toy. It's like that's I will never stop getting these for the rest of my life.
For the rest of her life.
For the rest of her life. She'll be like, you want this Ewok? If you don't want it, give it back. I'll take it.
I would say she knows me somewhat better because she got me, I don't know where she purchased, I assume at a thrift store somewhere, a signed Reggie Evans basketball she gave me earlier today. So that was much more on brand for me.
Just because you like basketballs, though. Yeah. Not because you like Reggie Evans. She's like, I thought this was a nice basketball for you. That's almost what it's like, right? That's almost like being like, you don't like the NBA. You just like the balls themselves, right?
Or just getting like a random player who has nothing to do with the Sonics. Yeah, and it happens like there, for some reason, there's an autograph of that player. Shouts to Reggie Evans, is always the first NBA player I ever interviewed in my career.
Wow, we need to get him on the Pelton Cast.
We do need to get him on the Pelton Cast. Is he still playing in the Big Three? I don't think he is this year, but... We can find some excuse for it. Anyways, we should talk about the beer that I did finally purchase at Safeway once I was able to get the correct club card number in there, and that is from Icicle Brewing Company in Leavenworth, Washington, the Bootjack IPA.
Do you want me to read about this?
Sure.
The Bootjack IPA from Icicle Brewing Company. This Northwest classic is a harmonious blend of our pride and our passion, inspired by the rugged and gentle terrain of the Cascade Mountains. Starting with the pristine waters of Icicle Creek, we add the intense flavors and aromas of our locally grown Yakima hops, pairing the citrusy floral hop notes with a sweet malty undertone. It's an IPA that's breaking the barrier between bitter and bold. And it's reminding you in this very moment that you need to go back to Leavenworth and eat at the Moonshine House this summer.
It's not on there. I guarantee you that's not on there. I had not previously seen Icicle beers in the store in Seattle. I think I very recently saw it on tap somewhere. And... did a little investigation on it.
Oh, you did some research. I went in the Wayback Machine to look at the first time that the Taco Time website was ever tracked on there.
Did you?
Crisp Chicken Burrito was on the menu as of like 1988.
Okay. So it's a 5-year window from when
at some when Jake point One between Jake One inventing the Crisp Chicken Burrito and Taco Time's website first being tracked by the Wayback Machine. At some point, we can now narrow it down to a 5-year window.
That's good.
Our research starts there.
We've winnowed it down. anyway, I found a press release from January indicating that Icicle Brewing has expanded their distribution into Western Washington. So that's exciting. Usually you only get it at the Moonjin House.
I'd still rather go to the Moonjin House. You
obviously.
Know, here's a take. Here's a take for you. Sometimes I want things in certain places.
But not in other places?
And I don't want those things to be available in all places.
So like you would be somewhat unhappy if Lone Star beer suddenly were available in Seattle. Because you wouldn't be drinking it solely in Austin.
It would be the worst day of my entire life if that was the case.
You could just drink it blindfolded and think it was Rainier.
The biggest example of this is, this is not necessarily the case with Icicle. Like, I don't have such strong feelings about Icicle Brewing that would be the case.
But you definitely associate it with the Moonshine House.
But at 8-Bit in downtown Renton, they have an NBA Jam arcade game.
Oh, yes.
And I always resisted the idea of buying NBA Jam for Super Nintendo.
Which I suggested at one point.
Which I now have. We ended up caving.
Oh, you did?
Well, because there was one time we went there like 2 months ago, and Baby Fantasy Genius, it was in use the entire time. These people kept playing, and it was getting tense, right? Like, you have to be a little bit courteous if people are watching an arcade game, right? You have to, like, take your time, go play something else, and then come back.
But they also don't actually have NBA Jam, right?
It's NBA Jam Tournament Edition.
Oh, it is? Okay.
It's basically NBA Jam 2.
Okay, because they've also got the whatever the like the
NFL
version
Blitz.
Was that was with NFL Blitz, but there's also the NBA, like NBA on NBC style game is also part of that, right?
Yeah, it was like the sequel to NBA Jam, but the people made it. Do you remember that? Like they lost the license to NBA Jam.
Right.
You read the oral history. They lost the license to NBA Jam, but it's still basically NBA Jam.
Yes.
So they had that there, and I resisted getting on Super Nintendo because it would lose its luster when we went to 8-Bit. It wouldn't be as special anymore.
It's like how it's not as exciting to hear a song when you play it on Spotify as when you hear it randomly on the radio.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The song Celebration by, or Congratulations by Post Malone over and over and over again on the radio.
Welcome back, Cube.
Luca told me today, he was like, Dad, we heard Congratulations on the way to the Museum of Flight and from the Museum of Flight. And I was like, you're getting it, child.
I also had the experience on Sunday of left the car, the song was playing, came back to the car, the same song was playing.
Was that song by Post Malone?
I don't think that one was by Post Malone, sadly. We're going to talk about our top X number of songs of 2018 so far later in the episode, so stay tuned for that. But right now, we should talk about burritos because we have a couple of places to talk about.
I wanted to mention one situation where this seems like the case, where you want something in a certain place. I'm getting a little bit cold feet here, but you don't necessarily want it available to you at all times.
What's that?
Shake Shack.
Ooh, interesting. I mean, you know what? It's actually still going to be easier to get on a plane and fly to New York and go get Shake Shack, or Las Vegas is...
Or what, one of these places that they have it in multiple terminals at the airport.
Yes. They do have it in one of the LAX terminals too, right?
Wait, really?
I think they do. I think that's the thing, but it's not the Alaska terminal.
Exactly.
So you might have multiple opportunities to get Shake Shack this week, but it'll probably be easier to get it there than it will be to get it at the South Lake Union location.
Oh, and by all accounts, the event that they had last weekend was a huge success, and something like 1.2 million people showed up.
That sounds about right. That checks out knowing the population of Seattle. I believe I saw on Twitter that Third Pelton brother, Nate, and that group intended to go, but the line was too long and they just gave up on it.
Good for them. Good for them. Look, we played with them. I told Shake Shack on this very podcast weeks ago, I said move it to a larger location.
It's almost like they're not listening. But I think they kind of want it to be like that. Sometimes you want there to be a line.
To me, I understand the trying to have demand, keep demand high, scarcity a little bit. But I want that scarcity in as much as that I want them out of Seattle. I've pivoted, right? There's a full 180.
That is a dramatic pivot. I did see one person who successfully got a burger at the Shake Shack.
They're like unicorns.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Sorry.
So two taco burrito reviews this week. We're going to start with Taqueria Cantina in Belltown, a location not far from your new office. So therefore, a place that you have frequented. I had never been before you first posted about it on Instagram.
I've been there twice. Number one, I had an al pastor burrito.
Okay.
These are very large burritos.
Interesting.
The second time I went back, I went with al pastor mulitas.
Wait, you could do al pastor mulitas?
Of course you can.
So I went during happy hour, and the happy hour menu had mulitas on there and only listed carne asada and like chicken or whatever. I didn't see pastor as an option.
And you needed pastor?
No, I got the mulita. I got the I got the asada mulitas, but okay. I didn't know that el pastor was an option. I then also got an el pastor taco and chipotle carnitas.
Really?
The tacos.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts?
The tacos I thought were kind of meh. Especially, I mean, the price point was better because of happy hour, but the regular price point is pretty high for the tacos. But I thought the mulitas were outstanding.
Really?
Yeah.
There's something about this place where it just leaves me wanting more.
I don't think the meat is that great.
It just doesn't pop analysis. In any way, right? I mean, the presentation from the mulitas was great. There was tons of guac. I was able to put it in there.
Yeah, I didn't get any guac with my mulitas.
That's probably a happy hour thing.
Okay.
You probably, I mean, I don't know for sure, but that's an assumption that I'm making.
I wasn't necessarily counting on guac with my mulitas, but I was hoping for it and was a little bit disappointed.
Even still, though, there's just no flavor that really stands out. It's like, it's not a situation where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. It's kind of just like, there's really no great flavor here, and there's no great flavor overall.
Any other thoughts on this? I mean, did you have a take on mulitas versus tacos?
Versus the burrito?
Or yeah,
honestly, the exact same thought about the burrito. The meat just needs to explode with flavor a little bit more.
No, I agree. 100% agree.
I've only had the pastor. I didn't stray away from the pastor, of course.
I mean, I don't think this was a bad place to go. It wasn't a bad experience. I enjoyed my dinner, but I don't think this is a competitor for Seattle's best burrito/tacos.
It's just totally fine.
What is that? Is a rating like an 85?
I'm giving it an 80.
Okay, okay. All right, for our second location this week, we're going to talk about a place that is not eligible for the title of Seattle's Best Burrito because it is, in fact, a national chain. But it's a place that, especially if we're discussing burritos, we must talk about Chipotle. The time has come. So do you want to get us started here? Because you are the Chipotle aficionado in this family.
Am I?
Well, at least among the two of us.
Okay. I probably am of everybody, too. I'm a pretty big Chipotle fan.
I mean, I feel like the famous cousin Katie, pretty into Chipotle.
Nothing on me when it comes to Chipotle. I would say that if I had to judge, let's say, any national chain, right? We're excluding In-N-Out, right? Because it's not a national chain. It's a regional chain. Excluding, of course, Taco Time Northwest, regional to Western Washington.
Does this include Taco Time International?
We can include them. I think that this is probably my number one restaurant in the country.
That does not surprise me that you would think that. Now I'm trying to think what my number one national chain would be. I don't know. I might go Jimmy John's.
Jimmy John's?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I love me some Jimmy John's, but like Jimmy John's, like I eat Chipotle with such glee, right? The way that I eat Chipotle is on the spectrum with how I judge these burrito places that we're going to week. Like I don't look at it as like, oh, this is like a piece of food that I can get, and I can get it so often I'm gonna eat it and just like whatever. This is really standout food every single time you go there, right? Like, I mean, if we're being honest, they have elevated what fast food looks like.
I mean, I think that's certainly fair that they led a revolution in the fast casual space, a term that I know that not everyone loves as a description here. I would say that I am more in the latter category of like, okay, this is a thing I can get and I know it's going to be really solid and it's going to be, you know, the same every time because they have a high degree of consistency.
It's not going to be the same every time.
Because of the difference in the quantity of the portions?
Because the difference in the freshness of the food. So sometimes Chipotle, this is the amazing thing about Chipotle, is that these are real ingredients that you're having, right? These
you can
are not,
see them firing up not, the chicken on the grill back
and it's
there.
It's such a great thing to watch, right? Like you it can actually see people cooking your food right there in front of you. It's almost more enjoyable than
it's
that.
Actually
like,
someone else's food. They're not because they're not putting that into your burrito.
No, I just asked them to put it directly in.
Okay, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, I mean they'll customize however you want. You just have to wait a little bit.
They are very flexible,
but. Sometimes it's like the fajita vegetables might be different at a different time than another time because the vegetables that are in season are different. And the corn often looks different at various times. Like there are ingredients that look different depending on what time of year you go.
Because you know that this is not like a heavily processed frozen ingredient.
And the guac might look different. The consistency in the guac might look different, right? They're cooking it fresh every single day. Like there's so much about Chipotle that is similar to an actual restaurant, right? Like, that's the spectrum that it should be judged on. Not a fast casual, not fast food. Like, this is restaurant quality food that is available quickly.
So you see a dramatic gap between Chipotle and the other burrito places in this space, chains in this space, most notably Qdoba.
I mean, I've eaten at Qdoba so few times, and I've been satisfied eating at Qdoba so few times.
Wow. See,
just knowing that it's like, I wish there was a better example for this. It's like eating really good pizza and then having Little Caesars.
Poor Little Caesars.
Just knowing that something that is great is out there in the marketplace means that I can never eat the other thing again.
So I would say I feel about Chipotle a little bit like a lot of Seahawks Twitter feels about In-N-Out. Like, it's good, I enjoy it, but the way that other people talk about it does not match up to my experience of it. And by the way, my thing is, like, that's fine. Like, eat what you like. That's great. You don't have to like you. Whether you like the same thing as me doesn't really affect my life. Actually, it does with you because it means that I eat Chipotle all the time.
Kind of. You order
it. We haven't in a while. We used to.
You're not eating Chipotle that much.
It was a pretty regular staple for a while.
Ugh, I miss those days.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me go through my standard order here.
Okay.
Right? So sometimes I switch this up. The amazing thing that I do... Okay, so first off, I'll get a burrito, right? I like that they steam the tortillas. They're not freshly made, but they do steam the tortillas. And really, that's kind of a huge part of what they're doing there. Like, that softness in the tortilla that's, like, almost wet a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just an excellent texture, right? The white rice with the cilantro in it. I mean, come on. I was making rice. Were you here when I made that rice a couple weeks ago?
I was,
and
yes.
Put the cilantro in it. It was inspired.
Inspired by Chipotle, apparently.
The white rice, black beans. I often go chicken. I know some people like to do... you can do a combo of meats that they'll do, basically. And you almost end up...
I never even considered that. That's like putting cheese on your Mexi fries.
You're not aware of the combo?
No.
Oh, well. You should dabble in more websites that tell you sneaks at Chipotle. The sneak
we'll
here
that in a second.
Is that you would basically... They charge you for the higher priced meat.
Gotcha.
But it's almost like you get two full portions of each meat.
Really?
Like, I mean, really, you know, the way that they do it, you're getting a lot of meat if you do it that way. So if you're comfortable with getting... I do the chicken. I know there are some people who feel really strongly at the carnitas. It's very flavorful, their carnitas.
Interesting. You know what I go with is the barbacoa.
And that's like shredded beef?
Yes.
Also really flavorful.
Yes.
Right? Like, it almost... The chicken is great, and I think the chicken tastes excellent. It's seasoned perfectly. Seeing them cook it right there is great. The barbacoa and the carnitas are almost a little bit too flavorful for me.
No such thing.
And then I'll do hot sauce. Really, Chipotle is the place that taught me to love spice. You know? It's like the first place that I went full on hot sauce.
I can't tell if that's the whitest thing you've ever said or not.
No. The whitest thing that I've ever said is how much I love mayonnaise.
Shuts to mayonnaise.
Shuts to mayonnaise. I have another white part of my order coming later.
Okay.
I do the hot sauce plus the corn salsa and then sour cream and cheese. And 100% of the time, I ask for more sour cream than they put on there. Even if they put a lot of sour cream, I want more sour cream. Okay. So if that's also a pretty white thing. I want sour cream to be in almost every single bite.
You never have to ask that at Taco Time Northwest. They give you a healthy amount of sour cream.
I still want more.
Out of the vat.
I still want more. I want some more jackhammered sour cream. But so sometimes I'll switch it up and I'll do tacos, but do the exact same order in tacos. It's kind of a sneak also, because you're ending up with a shitload of food when you do it that way. Because the normal way that they make tacos, they don't do the rice and beans. They'll move straight to the meat. I just get the exact same ingredients that I would get in a burrito, but in three tacos.
Hmm.
And it's a lot of food.
Okay.
So this is like exact same order every single time. Rarely do I mix it up. I've found the right order and the perfect consistency at Chipotle. And I have no need to change anything because I am satisfied from that order 100 times out of 100.
The thing about my barbacoa preference is at some point I sent myself an email about it. And now every time I go back to Chipotle, because I don't go that often, I have to go revisit that email to be like, what is it I order? Is it the carnitas or is it the barbacoa? It's the barbacoa.
So the one thing that I've added, this is going to lead into naturally what you're going to talk about.
Okay.
Is because I'm fat. I will sometimes now do both a burrito and a cheese quesadilla.
Wow.
Because I'm not a quesadilla guy, right? Like, I rarely would order the quesadilla in almost any situation. But Chipotle's quesadilla is legitimately the best quesadilla in the entire world.
I mean, I don't think you've had every quesadilla in the entire world.
Oh, come on.
I don't think you can say that.
I've never enjoyed a quesadilla I've had as much as I enjoy those quesadillas at Chipotle.
I like that this is a reversal of when you called me out for calling La Taqueria the best burrito in the world a few episodes ago. Okay, so something I have always wanted to do at Chipotle is to get a quesarito, but for whatever reason had never pulled the trigger. Like, the lines were too long and I didn't want to bother them with it. But I went in on Saturday evening in preparation for this podcast. It was pretty quiet. There was no one in line behind me when I ordered and finally asked about the quesarito and achieved this lifelong dream.
Now, can you explain what a quesarito is?
So they make the quesadilla. They put it, they warm it up in the, you know, where they're warming up the bun, the tortillas. But they're, you know, at this point, you're getting it griddled. Like, it's not, it's no longer a little bit damp. The tortilla.
It's crispy.
It's now, yeah, it's crispy. And it's got cheese inside. And then they open that up and then build the burrito inside the quesadilla shell. So this is a lot, but it was also just right.
Really?
Yeah.
So I've had a few quesaritos in my day. I'd say I probably had three quesaritos. And this is the Chipotle, like, secret menu.
Yes.
Right? It's a little bit more secret than the In-N-Out secret menu, which I think they list on their website. You don't go to the Chipotle website and see quesarito on there.
Yeah, the double-double or the animal style is too open a secret at this point.
I would say that there are probably people listening right now to this very podcast who have never heard of a quesarito before.
I mean, it definitely went mainstream, especially with Taco Bell doing the quesarito.
Also, I really overstated things by saying that people were listening to this podcast.
Yeah, the listener.
Like, if the listener already knows about a quesarito, then they're not learning anything.
Exactly.
So you really liked having quesarito?
I thought it was the best Chipotle experience.
Wow! Really?
Ever had.
Okay, so what is the thinking here? Like, why, what makes it so good having a quesarito?
I thought the fact that the tortilla was griddled was a game changer.
Really?
And then, like, so I went with, I still put cheese inside of it.
Oh, yeah. I make the burrito whenever I do a quesarito exactly the same, just with the quesarito on the outside. Yeah,
that's a lot of cheese. That's a good amount of cheese. I don't know. The cool combination, it worked for me.
You're going to want to feel like you're dying.
I didn't feel like I was dying, necessarily. Yeah, no, I wouldn't go that far. But although this was a hefty eating weekend of eating tacos and burritos, because I went to Taqueria Cantina on Friday night before the Storm game. Went to Chipotle on Saturday, and then Sunday, last minute, got the call from some friends to meet up at Taco's Chuki's
for lunch
on Sunday afternoon. So in a span...
You didn't make it to Taco Time any of these days?
Taco Time... When did I go to Taco? No, not this, during that span. So during a span of, let's say, probably 44 hours, went to all three of these places.
Nice.
So
wow. I'm jealous of you, naturally.
Yes.
I mean, really, the taco. I haven't been to Tacos Chuki's in so long. We're eating all of these tacos and burritos that aren't Tacos Chuki's.
Can I give you a story about the Tacos Chuki's visit? So okay. I naturally ordered. I only got one Tecate. I was one shy of the Peltoncast Triple Double Bs. We were about to record the Dunked On Mock Off season.
And you couldn't record a Dunked On Mock Off season after having two Tecates?
To have a
that
clear
might
head.
Liven things up a little bit.
Wow. I mean, you know, it might have been more reflective of some teams had I had two Tecates, their actual decision making. But I feel like it was a strong mock off season for me. I'm going to say that.
Just the idea of you having like a great mock off season.
I really patted myself on the back for my work with the
that
Pacers.
Was great.
Look, I got LeBron to the Rockets. What do you want me to do? So I ordered the two.
You
house
lost
tacos.
LeBron at the Lakers, though.
Oh, I could only there could only be one. Like, I was destined to fail with at least one of them. I got the two house tacos and the two baby burritos.
Yes.
The two friends I was there with both got one house taco and one baby burrito, and then they saw my bounty of food and were immediately like, "We got to go back and order more."
What? First off, the experience has to happen so often at Tacos Chuki's where people run it back.
I think that's right? They've got to lead the league in people running it back.
That's a great stat to lead the league in also.
It
right?
sure
that's
is.
Like the most important stat. And also people just tweeting or Instagramming at the Peltoncast with their Tacos Chuki's orders.
Every time you go, you should be doing that.
I love seeing them every time.
It worked out because the line was randomly really short the two times that they ordered. And then immediately after they ordered the second time, like everyone in line.
So did they just got one baby burrito and one taco and thought they would be good with that?
I don't know. I can't speak to their thinking.
How many tacates did they get?
I don't believe... I don't know if there were any tacates. No, there may have been. I can't remember. I wasn't paying that close attention.
You should have been doing... You were with your people, your SSBDA group?
I was.
SSSBDA group?
Yes.
Why were you not informing them going in of what the order should be? Had they been there before?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Dane, one of the two people who was there, has listened to the podcast. He said that he listened to the podcast before and wanted to go to Tacos Chuki's, which he had never been to before hearing us discuss it on the Pelton cast, and then went and loved it.
You should have been informing them and been like, hey, just so you know, here's what you're going to want to do. Two baby burritos, two tacos, and two tacates is kind of the order.
Look, I like to lead by example.
That's how you get LeBron to the Rockets. Okay. Anyway, Chipotle. So to me, the quesarito is it.
Do you think it's better than the regular burrito?
To me, it's significantly worse.
Significantly worse?
For two reasons. Number one.
So you've gotten it three times despite the fact that you think it's significantly worse?
Well, I just, you know, I want to try it out. All right. Right? Like, I want to, there are some things.
You're going to confirm that opinion?
Yeah. I want to make sure that I didn't just have one bad experience. And then the second time, I want to make sure I didn't have two bad experiences. It's such a fun thing to order.
Fool me
right?
once, shame on you. Fool me twice. Fool me three times.
So here are the reasons that I don't like it. First off, you pay for both a burrito and a quesadilla.
That is accurate.
Which I would just rather have a burrito and a quesadilla.
As you do.
That's the order to me. Also, the crispiness on the tortilla means that things are spilling everywhere. There's something about
that was an issue.
The soft tortilla, because it'll burst open, right? When it's crispy, there are holes that happen, and all of a sudden you've got sour cream and corn spilling everywhere.
I manage it.
It's not quite, the consistency isn't quite right to me. There's something about the soft tortilla kind of holding everything in its place that I really like. I mean, sure, when you get a burrito that has as much stuff in it as I'm getting, and that has as much sour cream as I demand in that burrito.
just fill the entire thing with sour cream. No meat, no cheese, all sour cream.
Like, what's your choice of meat? Sour cream. Would you like any vegetables? More sour cream.
Is sour cream a vegetable? Then yes.
Yes. Anyway, I've perfected the all sour cream and hot sauce burrito. anyway, things slip all over the place, but you're going to have a little bit of slippage, right? You're going to have parts of your burrito spill no matter what.
Okay.
But when you get the quesarito, there's so much spilling. And also, I feel like you don't taste the cheese that much.
I wouldn't say that was an issue for me. I didn't have that concern. Can I give you my vision of what the quesarito was before I actually ordered it?
Yes.
I thought that they made a quesadilla.
Yes.
And then they made the burrito.
Yes.
And they wrapped the burrito with the quesadilla.
So you're getting two tortillas.
Yes. You're getting with your quesadilla and burrito. That's what I envisioned in my head.
Here's a thought.
You could just do that yourself?
Yeah.
I guess there's nothing stopping you.
Or you could probably ask them to do it. I would be curious to try that. It's a lot of tortilla, though.
That was one of my concerns with it.
But
it's as much tortilla as you're already getting.
That is true. I'm already eating two tortillas.
Yeah.
And to me, the quesadilla is so good on its own. Both of the items are so good on their own. That's like being like, hey, can you just wrap a baby burrito inside of a taco, inside of a tecate? Right? Like, you don't need, they're perfect as they are.
I'm considering this.
Just shove it into a tecate can. Put a slice of pineapple on top and call it good. I just really, really love the burrito as it is, and I love the quesadilla as it is, and I don't think I need the two to meet, except in my stomach, where they're having a great party.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, they leave a bit of a mess at the end of that party. They don't clean up after themselves.
You know what's crazy is that I've maybe ordered alcohol at Chipotle, like, two times ever. I've been to Chipotle 100-plus times, right? And I've maybe ordered alcohol there like one or two times for whatever, like maybe it was Halloween or something.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever done it.
At Tacos Chuki's, I have 100% of the time I've been there, basically.
Well, I also rarely eat at Chipotle.
Even when I mean, it doesn't really make sense to me why, like, at Tacos Chuki's, I need to have beer. But at Chipotle, I would never consider it.
Well, do they have $3 tecates?
It's like $3.65. Like, beer is actually shockingly cheap at Chipotle.
I ate my Chipotle at home and purchased a 32-ounce Corona to drink with it.
I saw that.
It was a great combo.
I saw that. That looked pretty good.
Terrific Saturday night. All right. What is your rating for Chipotle on the scale?
It's almost impossible to rate.
But it's not impossible to rate.
What did I give to Tacos Chuki's?
I know I gave it a 95. I don't know what you gave it.
It's like a 98 in Tacos Chuki's.
You haven't had La Taqueria.
I guess I'm going to give Chipotle a 94.
Huh. Okay. I thought this last burrito, or the quesarito, I would say an 89 or a 90 in that range, which is a higher score, obviously.
89 or a 90? Did you say 99 or 90?
If I did, then that's the issue of drinking during a podcast. Like, you see the problems it creates.
An 89 or 90 is what you get.
90, yes.
I think that if Chipotle was a local taco burrito chain, I think the way that we would approach it would be different, and I think we would consider it the clear number two seed for the best burrito in Seattle.
Yeah, perhaps so. I mean, obviously, I don't feel as strongly about Chipotle as you do.
God. Love you, Chipotle.
Should we talk about Seattle sports, which there's not a lot going on, but we'll get to what is going on.
When are we talking music?
At the end.
Okay.
We start with an NHL update. We talked last week about the possibility of former Washington Capitals coach Barry Trotz joining the Seattle NHL team. Is there coaching waiting for several years here, not coaching a team? But sadly, that is not going to be the case, as he has decided to, in fact, coach an actual hockey team.
What a shock.
Those being the New York Islanders, the one team that had it.
He decided not to take 3 years off from coaching?
maybe two. We'll see.
Did people actually think that this was going to happen?
Yes. Yes, they did.
Okay. Cool.
Last week was the NHL owners meetings at which it was once thought the owners might vote on the expansion application from the NHL Seattle group. Of course, they decided not to do that. And Commissioner Gary Bettman made it very clear at those owners meetings that, you know, the issue is not one about the expansion application per se, but strictly with the arena situation and figure out when, you know, the Kiryani renovation will be complete. Here's his quote. The timetable on finishing the application and doing what we need to do, we can do that as quickly or as slowly as appropriate. That's a matter of weeks and months, not years. The bigger issue is going to be their timeline on the building. So, as we discussed, that will be contingent on the environmental impact study and whether there's an appeal of that environmental impact study by the condo complexes nearby Key Arena.
But timeline's still a pretty big question here for the renovation of Key Arena.
Yes. So, we'll know more on that in the months to come. This past week was the NBA draft. We previewed that on this very podcast. You'll note that I said that I thought the Blazers were going to take Anfernee Simons out of IMG Academy because of the fact that they had brought him in for a second workout, and lo and behold, they drafted Anfernee Simons.
There it is.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of podcasts are out there. Maybe people said on another podcast that the Blazers were likely to draft Anfernee Simons.
I mean, Jason Quick was definitely predicting it. Shout out to Quick on that.
Very few of those podcasts were giving you a full breakdown of what IMG Academy is, though.
That's very true. I was intrigued. I mean, Simons is a project. We'll see. You know, I mean, I don't know that I would have drafted him as high as the Blazers did, but they know a ton more about him. They've worked him out two more times than I have.
Yeah, it's really funny when people act like they know more than the teams about these players. It's like the amount of time that any like individual is spending on almost any individual player is probably so little as compared to what teams are paying attention to on these players.
Yeah, but sometimes the team's judgment is not so good.
It's like somebody's like, oh, I watched the highlights on YouTube. It's like, watching highlights on YouTube is like equivalent to Kyrie Irving doing research on whether the earth is flat on Instagram.
I'm gonna leave that alone. I'm gonna leave that one alone. I was more intrigued though, but with the second round, where at first I thought the Sacramento Kings had made a good pick.
Oh.
Because they took Gary Trent Jr., who I had rated is like a top 25 prospect in this draft, with the 37th overall pick. Have him projected is, you know, the best shooter among any of the players who actually got drafted.
Really?
But lo and behold, That was not the Kings making a good pick because they had actually traded this pick yes. to the Blazers.
There it is.
And they are the ones who ended up with Gary Trent Jr.
The best shooter in the draft, excluding nobody?
I mean, Trae Young is like on a different scale because he's going to shoot such a high volume, but probably will not shoot a high percentage from three in the NBA.
You said he was the best shooter in the draft?
That's how he projects.
Really?
Yes.
Wow!
I mean, he was great from the free throw line in his 1 year at Duke, shot over 40% from three. So all the indicators on Gary Trent being a good shooter are strong.
Was Gary Trent Sr. a Blazer?
He was.
I remember him being a Blazer.
He sure was. So yeah, this is a generational, a legacy.
It's in his blood.
Yes. I mean, a few teams are in Gary Trent Jr.'s blood by that standpoint. I think the Blazers got him originally, though, didn't they? Did they end up with him out of the draft? I'll have to look that up.
Maybe the Kings actually drafted him.
Well, I think that actually Gary Trent Sr. may have been involved in a draft day trade as well. We'll have to look
if you could remember the exact Gary Trent Sr. draft day trade, that'd be impressive.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I could go that far. He did, in fact, begin his career with Portland. He was drafted by Milwaukee and traded for Sean Respert.
Oh, man, Sean Respert. So I didn't know this, but I love this pick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a Blazers pick, right?
It is. I mean, you know, they've had success finding contributors on the wing in the second round in recent years. I mean, my suggestion is, I think down the road that, you know, he could fill the Allen Crabbe role for the Blazers that Pat Connaughton, another second round pick, stepped into last season.
That's a great role to fill with a second round pick.
It is. I mean, I don't know that I expect that next year. And Neil Olshey tried to temper the expectations for, you know, Trent to contribute right away. I mean, he only played the 1 year in college. But you know, I think down the road, he can be a very useful player because I'm optimistic that he'll become good enough defensively, you know, not quite a 3-and-D role player, but if you're as good at the 3 end of it as he projects to be, you only have to be okay at the
D. How tall is he?
6'5", 6'6".
So he's not quite tall enough to be like Mo Harkless or something?
Yeah, no. You wouldn't project him in that kind of role, but similar to Crabbe.
All right, well, that's not bad. That's not a bad draft for the Blazers.
Yeah.
Somebody who did maybe have a bad draft...
Michael Porter Jr.? Yeah, rough night for the pride of Nathan Hale High School, who dropped all the way to 14th, where he was taken by the Denver Nuggets, amid suggestions that there could be a redshirt year coming from him, possibly a second back surgery after the surgery he had during his freshman year at Missouri.
It really feels like that's happening, right?
It seems like a likely possibility.
There's just so much smoke around it where...
I thought this was interesting, by the way. Jonathan Givony posted on Friday or Saturday his 2019 mock draft. And Jonte Porter is now projected to go higher in 2019 than Michael Porter went
this
year.
That's amazing.
It would be wild if Jonte ends up the higher drafted Porter.
I like it for Denver, though. I mean, pretty much like everybody, it feels like it's a pretty good pick for Denver.
At that point, I think the risk-reward makes sense. And I think the teams are generally too conservative with how they handle players with injury risk in the draft.
There have been a lot of players, like Blake Griffin had a redshirt year, Joel Embiid 2 years, right?
Yeah, it's actually worked out pretty well recently. I mean, Ben Simmons, obviously, who won Rookie of the Year earlier this evening. I looked at this and found that players had tended to exceed expectations when they'd missed the whole year, although, you know, the number of highly drafted guys probably is a factor in that.
Who've missed the entire season?
Yeah.
Basically, with those players, they're saying, we're willing... I mean, Ben Simmons, they didn't know about the injury, right?
No.
Embiid people had a pretty good sense of it, though.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not that he had missed multiple seasons, but...
And Blake also did not know. That was another case that he was injured, I think, in the lead-up... No, it wasn't in the lead-up to the Olympics. I can't remember where it was, but maybe in training camp.
But at no point, really, with any of those draft picks, would you look back and say, wow, these were bad draft picks, including Simmons and Griffin, who were number one draft picks. Yeah. The productivity that they had completely outweighed losing one season of them.
Yeah, especially in an era where rookies last year aside rarely contribute much during their first season. Like, you shouldn't be concerned about that. It's all about, you know, I think there are concerns about how it affects him long term, having potentially a second back surgery before the age 20. I mean, that's an issue. But I think at that point in the draft, I'm surprised the Clippers didn't take him with one of their picks.
Yeah. The thing that makes, I could see also being a caution is that the reason rookies are so valuable is you get them for 4 years relatively cheap.
Yes.
And with somebody like Michael Porter, Now you only get him for 3 years relatively cheap, should he have.
But again, they're not usually relatively cheap as rookies. Now, they're providing potentially more value compared to that salary than he will by not, if he doesn't play at all. But I just don't think that should enter the calculation almost at all. But because of the fact that teams are usually obsessively short-term in their thinking, it does.
Huh. So let's say that you were a team. You would have drafted him if you were the Clippers.
Yes.
You think he's worth like the 12th pick?
I mean, I would certainly rather have him than Kevin Knox, who went ninth to the Knicks.
Okay, so you feel like he should
I mean,
have
again, this is not having seen his actual medical records, but assuming the medical records say what the fact that he dropped to 14th implies they say, I would still rather have him than Kevin Knox.
If people are talking about 14, like he fell out of the first round also. It's a little bit like, I mean, falling from maybe 7 to 14
but
is
part
a fall,
of,
but it's not that big of a fall.
But that's only the draft day part of it, because going into the year, we were thinking this guy is a top 3 pick before he had the back surgery at all.
Okay.
Now, the pushback I got when I tweeted during the draft that the age limit had cost him millions was that, you know, this condition, it was an issue before he actively needed to have surgery at Missouri, and it would have been an issue for him in the draft process if he had been able to enter last year. But I still think odds are he would have gone higher than 14th.
It's a weird thing to think about, because they draft the same amount of players in the same spots every year.
Yes.
So, like, just because it costed Michael Porter Jr. Because it cost Michael Porter Jr. millions or whatever, it also made somebody else millions.
But it's an unequal distribution, because the player, like Michael Porter, is losing a lot more than any one player makes. Like, if everyone else bumps up a spot, it's not that big of a deal for them. But if he drops, you know, 12 spots or whatever it is, then it is a really big deal to him.
But you're also not factoring in somebody who a year ago, let's say that they benefited, like, I don't know who, Jaren Jackson or something, who wouldn't have been a top 5 pick a year ago.
Yes, but I you don't have to enter the draft. No one's requiring you to come in out of high school.
Every
That's not a
year they draft the same amount of players in the exact same spots.
I'm just saying it's an unequal distribution, and the fact that he was injured playing for free at Missouri, I mean, granted, his dad may have gotten some compensation for...
He was playing for free.
He was playing for free at Missouri. Like, that's not cool to me. Not a fan of that.
So NBA free agency will have started by the time we next talk?
That is correct. It'll be well underway.
Well underway?
Yeah.
So I think it's time for us to check in with our favorite team, not the Thunder.
It's a big couple weeks here for not the Thunder.
Man.
Not the Thunder are sweating out Paul George's free agency.
We do this a lot, right?
Yes.
I mean, the big one already happened, but Paul George is still a big deal, right? This is the difference for Not the Thunder of a team in the Thunder being, you know, basically like a perennial playoff team. Maybe not like a legit championship contender, but somebody who's going to be in the mix, or without Paul George, looking like a team that's going to be maybe competing with where Minnesota and Denver were last year in that like 8th seed region, maybe a little bit lower.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, honestly, last year I don't know that the Thunder without Paul George, you know, I don't know that they would be dramatically worse than the Blazers were last season, and they got the 3 seed. Like, the West is pretty wide open in that regard.
But we'll the Blazers see. Were great last year?
Yeah, were they?
Oh, recency bias much? Jeez Louise.
Also, like, looking at point differential, which I think the Thunder had a better point differential than them.
Yeah. What is the deal? What do you know about Paul George right now?
I mean, the buzz in the league is increasingly that he's going to return for to the Thunder on a 1+1 year contract with a player option for the second year. Because he likes Russell Westbrook and wants to see through what this team could do with a healthy Andre Robertson.
It's just like... Are you kidding me, people? If Andre Robertson is healthy, does that mean that the Warriors don't exist anymore? Does that mean that the Rockets aren't a team?
Paul George is a free agent. That means he gets to do whatever he wants to do, including re-signing
with the
Thunder. I
don't understand this from a logical perspective. Like, does Paul George actually think that the Thunder have a chance of winning a championship?
I don't know. You'd have to ask him.
Okay,
that.
Let's say
this is like you're asking me what J.R. Smith's mindset was at the end of the game.
I think we know. Let's say that Paul George re-signs with the Thunder on a 1+1 deal. They have Carmelo coming back, a year older, still being Carmelo.
I mean, they could buy him out or trade him.
Or bought out Carmelo or whatever. And his trade value is basically, he's an expiring contract and that's it.
Yes.
How good is that team? Where do they finish in the West? Adding Andre Robertson.
I mean, it depends what other teams do. I mean, certainly, you know, barring something stunning with Chris Paul, the Warriors and the Rockets would be ahead of them. I mean, the Warriors and the Rockets are way ahead of everyone else in the Western Conference at this point. But beyond them, there's no other clearly very good teams in the Western Conference. There's a lot of uncertainty.
But there's still a lot of teams in the mix, too.
Yes.
Right? They're not going to all of a sudden be like that much better than the Hornets, that much better than the Blazers.
I mean, I think they will be that much better than the Hornets.
Oh, the Pelicans too.
Yes.
That much better than the Pelicans, that much better than the Blazers, that much better than maybe the Nuggets, the Timberwolves, the Jazz. Like, all of these teams have players who are young, who are going to get a year older and a year better, and the Thunder don't really have that.
There's a lot of uncertainty in the Western Conference.
I just don't get this from a logical perspective.
You're not Paul George.
I understand that I'm not Paul George.
And no, you don't seem to understand.
If you told me the reason was that he could make, how much more money can he make by staying in Oklahoma versus LA?
Well, none if he takes a 1+1. I mean, there'd be a 3% difference in his salary in the second year, but presumably he would decline that player option anyway.
Are you kidding me? This is just to stay in Oklahoma for another year?
Yeah. Okay.
I feel like that would be... It wouldn't surprise me because there's been so much talk around it lately. But if you told me a week ago that this was the case, it would have surprised me.
I think the smart thing to do is to expect it to happen. Monday was the NBA awards show. I think I may have referenced that earlier. And a toast, sadly I'm out of beer, but a toast to Jamal Crawford, the Seattle native and Rainier Beach product who won the... Maurice Stokes Jack Twyman Teammate of the Year Award is voted by his NBA peers. So
you can have all that.
Congrats to Jamal Crawford.
Oh, toast to Jamal. I want to know about other free agency stuff here. Are you talking about this on other podcasts aside from the mock off season?
Not really.
What do you feel like is the word circling about LeBron lately?
I mean, Brian Windhorst is probably as plugged in here. I think went 51 Lakers, 40 Cavs, 9 Sixers.
The Sixers are still in the mix.
Still in the mix.
Huh.
It doesn't seem likely that he's going to pick up his player option and therefore be eligible to be traded to a team like Houston.
That could happen last minute, though. We don't know for sure.
It could. I mean, it happened last minute with Chris Paul.
Yeah. We didn't know at this point last year that any of the Chris Paul stuff would happen.
We did not.
Do you feel like that changes things for Paul George?
I don't know.
All right.
I'm not Paul George.
Fine. God. I want you to answer this the way I want you to answer it.
I'm not going to answer it the way you wanted me to answer it. I'm going to answer it the honest way.
Well, and I understand the approach that you have going in, assuming this should happen until it doesn't happen.
That's my approach.
All right.
All right. It's time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
Last week, I said the jig was up for the Mariners, and I was right. Since last week's Mariners hot takes, the team went 2-5 with many tough losses along the way. But I realize now the Nostradamus power is too immense and I need to pivot.
You're going to harness it for good?
I'm going to harness that power for good. And you know what? The Mariners are in a perfect position to make the playoffs in 2018.
Sure.
They are 7 games up. Despite this losing streak, there is no other team in all of the American League that is making any push to get to the playoffs. Mariners were so good for so long that they could withstand a 2-5 streak.
That's true.
There is nothing about them in this moment that leads me to believe that there is a chance that they miss the playoffs this season.
Wow, 100% odds.
100% chance of making the playoffs.
Can I ask you an important question?
What is that?
Am I interrupting?
No, go on.
Is being the second wild card, is that actually making the playoffs?
It is making the playoffs. Imagine the Mariners ace for the last 10 years. James Paxton in a 1-game playoff. The big maple out there. How much confidence do you have?
Well,
spirit of 95 is alive with these Mariners, and it used to be the big unit, and now it's the big maple in a 1-game playoff.
Okay, but would you say that the California Angels made the playoffs in 95? No,
they didn't make the playoffs. That was different. Times were different. They did not make the playoffs.
I feel like we would call this making the playoffs mostly because the Mariners have gone so long without making the playoffs.
Because the Mariners would win this 1 game.
Okay. Oh.
And then they would be on to the first round. Is there a doubt about this in your mind?
There is some doubt, yeah. I mean, if you're willing to bet like everything to one on the Mariners reaching the division series, everything to one. Then I'm in on that bet. I'll put down my one against your everything.
There is no team in baseball who can field a better starting pitcher than the Mariners can in a one-game play-in.
I don't know anything about baseball, but that seems implausible.
No, it's true. I crunched the numbers.
Did you?
Facts. As long as they're able to manage the rotation right, which they will be able to, because literally nobody else is competing for the second wildcard spot, as long as they're able to manage the rotation right and get this to be Paxton in that one-game play-in, the Mariners are into the first round, into the wildcard series.
Okay.
You can mark it right here. We are almost at July, and the Mariners are 7 games up.
Okay.
There's not that much more season left.
If you say so.
The lead was insurmountable. All they need to do from this point forward is win series. They don't have to go sweeping all these series. They have to win series and not get swept.
I feel like I hear the Arrested Development voice here. Ron Howard is saying... It was surmountable.
Insurmountable.
Either way, though, this is going to make a great segment for the end of the year hot takes season in review. I'm looking forward to it. We're only a mere 3 months away. Anything else on the Mariners?
No, I haven't been paying attention. All their games have been on the East Coast. It's been very difficult to pay attention to them.
Yeah, especially during the weekend. You did a great job of predicting they were about to play the Red Sox and the Yankees and would probably lose more games to them. Speaking of losing games, actually, no, speaking of drawing games, the Seattle Sounders with a 1-1 draw on Saturday against the Chicago Fire, a result that felt more like a loss than a win for the Sounders, who conceded a goal early, got the equalizer from Clint Dempsey with his first MLS goal this season, pulling level with Freddie Montero for the most MLS goals in club history. But the Sounders, even though, you know, they kept it even, the Fire generally had the better of play here, coming closer to scoring and holding advantages in X goals, both shot-based, 2.1 to 1.4, and non-shot, 1.8 to 1.3, according to 538 Soccer Power Index measurement. According to that same measurement, the Sounders' playoff odds after this home draw now down to 24%, which is still shockingly high, all things considered, because it's twice as many points as they've scored. And
is it 12 points? Like, if you asked me how many points they had scored, I'd be like, 6 maybe?
Yeah. I've got all the way to 12, which is about half as many as the Portland Timbers, who come to town this weekend for the Derby match, the rivalry fourth in the Western Conference at 1.64 points per match, and having beat the Sounders 1-0 in May at Providence Park. So obviously, this is a must-win for the Sounders, both from a rivalry standpoint and from an actually salvaging something of what looks like a lost season standpoint. The optimism has been beaten out of me.
This could be the low point of the year. If Portland comes in and beats the Sounders easily, clock's ticking.
It's not great. It's not great.
I'm telling you, where would you put Brian Schmetzer's odds of being the manager of the Sounders in 2019 at this point?
About 24%.
Oh, wow.
No, I don't know.
You were really confident about this before.
I don't know, man.
It's done for Schmetz. Oh, poor Schmetz. It's not his fault.
I don't think it's his fault, but I don't know that he's been the solution at this point. Wow. Like, they're just not playing good soccer anymore. Like, at the start of the year, they were playing good soccer and still losing matches. And as you pointed out last week, that hasn't been the case in a long time now.
It's been a while.
Wow. You know what the good news this week for the Sounders is? Like, I guess Gustav Svensson, this isn't the case necessarily of Sweden, but I was going to say that all of their players involved with the World Cup, like, their teams are doing horribly and are going to be out.
Great news.
Panama has not been a great first World Cup for Panama so far. It gave up a lot of goals.
Were they the ones who lost 5-0, 6-1 to...
They lost 5-2 to Belgium, I believe.
Oh, that was to Belgium. They weren't the team that lost to England.
No, I believe that was Tunisia. I want to say Tunisia.
Okay, I'm looking up hashtag Schmetzer out. Let's see what we got here. Really, it's been a while since people have tweeted Schmetzer out.
Well, they haven't played since Saturday.
Well, June 13th, that was the sample set is big enough. Hashtag Schmetzer out. Fair or foul, if the Sounders lose Saturday, it's time to start hashtag Schmetzer out and Logger way out. There's just a hashtag Schmetzer out. I'm actually embarrassed to be a Sounder fan right now. Hashtag Schmetzer out.
I hate that take so much. Like, what? You're embarrassed because the team is losing? Like, what the fuck does that mean? I hate that take so much. Like,
yeah.
It's not like they're not trying out there.
I'm not gonna say who that person was.
Was it? It was not third Pelton brother Mike Payne, no. Was it? Okay, good.
Wait, hold on. I have no idea what this is in context for because I'm not paying enough attention. But, well, this piece of crap for a team deserved that empty net goal. Disgraceful. Hashtag Garth out. Hashtag Schmetzer out. Hashtag Pineda out. Hashtag, I don't even know who Pineda is, but we're just clear.
Gonzalo Pineda, the former midfielder for the team, is now one of their lead assistant coaches. You guys realize they made the MLS Cup like 9 months ago. I know that. That seems, I mean, that I don't know if it doesn't seem like a long time, but no, it was like 7 months ago in the MLS timetable. It really wasn't that long ago, guys. Like, you can have one bad season. It's okay. We don't have to make the playoffs every single year. Like, expectations have to be reasonable.
But seriously, Schmetzer has made some very questionable decisions this year, and the Sounders have looked awful in their three biggest games of the past 2.5 years, so I don't feel bad in saying... Hashtag Schmetzer out.
No, that one I know was my favorite.
It's done. I mean, like, this is
not done.
There'd have to be a big change coming. Look, times are changing for the Sounders. This is the first time that the Sounders have really faced adversity.
In not exactly happier news, the Seattle Reign lost 4-1 to the league-leading North Carolina Courage on Saturday and were knocked for the first time in a while out of second place in the NWSL. They are now 3 points back of the Orlando Pride but still have a game in hand on the Pride. They are also hosting Portland.
Oh, no.
The Thorns on Saturday night at 7 p.m. The Seattle Storm beat the Indiana Fever last Friday, then used a 19-0 fourth quarter run to pull away from the Dallas Wings in an impressive 97-76 road win on Sunday. Sounders Storm now number one in
definitely
WNBA.
Not the Sounders.
No, definitely not number one in anything. Storm now number one in the WNBA in point differential, although when we account for their week schedule, which I rate the easiest in the league so far, they do drop down to number two behind the Connecticut Sun.
Because you had to put a wet blanket on that.
I sure did. The schedule will get more difficult this week as the Storm faces both teams who met in last year's WNBA finals starting Tuesday at Minnesota, which is just 7-6 so far this season, showing some signs of age, the Lynx, in the early going. And then on Thursday on ESPN2 at home against the LA Sparks in a meeting of right now the league's two best teams. The Sparks currently at 10-3, the Storm at 10-4, and then they will also host the aforementioned Connecticut Sun, another showdown on Sunday, before traveling to face the New York Liberty next Tuesday as part of a busy schedule right now for the Storm. By the way, did you see Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe in the body issue together, along with Breanna Stewart? So the Storm and the Reign heavily represented in the ESPN body issue. Nothing on the UW sports front this week. So as far as sports we wrap up, I wanted to do a quick book report on Michael Bennett's book.
I love that you call them reports and not reviews.
Well, because I'm not really telling you whether it's a good book or not. I'm like reporting back to you on the book. Things That Make White People Uncomfortable. I thought it was a really interesting, you know, we know that Michael Bennett is incredibly thoughtful, not necessarily for an athlete, but for anyone. And this book really fleshed that out in more of a way than possibly could be done in interviews and sound bites and things like that. I thought, you know, his writing on the importance of intersectionality and, you know, supporting all sorts of minority communities was really interesting. And then also his passion for food justice and, you know, how important that is to his work, you know, at the charity level. So some Seahawks related notes from this book. He talked about Pete Carroll and his, you know, importance to what the Seahawks are in the locker room and how much he respects Pete Carroll. I thought this was interesting. Referring to Bill Belichick, who, of course, his brother Martellus played for in New England and won a Super Bowl for, Belichick and Pete Carroll are, quote, so opposite in superficial style, it's as if they have come all the way around the circle to meet.
I love that description.
It's great. Notes that both of them just want you to show up on time and do the work. I also thought this was interesting. He talked about the decision to come back to the Seahawks as a free agent and apparently pass on longer offers from other teams when he was a free agent from Tampa Bay. Says, well, on the Bucks, I even had a dream that we would make it back to the Emerald City and we would win a Super Bowl. I wanted to see that dream through. And of course he did see that dream through with the Seahawks. I thought it was interesting. He talked about the 2013 team, the number of, quote, freak athletes they had. But the freakiest freak was Percy Harvin. A skill level so ridiculous, we'd watch him in practice. On the final play of Super Bowl 49, a game that, as we all know, was canceled. Everybody blames the throw, but Malcolm Butler jumped that route out of nowhere, so you tip your cap. If he doesn't make that play, we win. I thought that was a thoughtful perspective from him on that play, that, you know, he disputed the notion that it really had a lingering effect on the locker room, the decision not to run with Marshawn Lynch and what happened on that play. He very skeptical of that notion, at least publicly. Talked a lot about the brotherhood with his teammates, and one player who really came out better than almost anyone else in this book, Steven Hauschka.
Hausch money.
Shouts to the famous Cousin Katie's husband, Ben, big Steven Hauschka fan. Quote, Hauschka is a really cool dude. Hauschka's jersey is the only NFL jersey that Michael Bennett has in his home besides his own. And said he was key during the anthem discussion that the team had prior to the 2016 season.
Steven Hauschka?
Yeah.
Wow.
Really a hero of this book.
Wow. And the reason that they missed the playoffs this last year.
Well, 2 years
ago. Not having Steven Hauschka.
Oh, not
They made the playoffs this last 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact.
So then is part of the pseudo book tour for this book, which really kind of a series of conversations in the community. Bennett was in Seattle last week. And, you know, I thought this was interesting. We had a little bit of a discussion about this at the time of the trade, whether we thought that it had anything to do with his activism and the Seahawks kind of, you know, moving on from some of their more vocal players with him and Richard Sherman. And he disputed that notion, saying at this appearance, me being traded is part of the business. But it doesn't make it any easier. So,
did he actually dispute that? That's just a quote about the business. That doesn't, that quote at least doesn't dispute that notion.
Well, Bob Condotta's reporting said that he disputed it and offered that quote. I wasn't there at the actual speech, so I'm going by Bob's interpretation of it, and I think that's a trustworthy with third Pelton brother, Bob Condotta. So I think
gotta love Michael Bennett though.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
right. In every way. I mean, I told you this, that after Michael Bennett left the Seahawks, I went out and got Michael Bennett merchandise after he was on the team because I know that I'll want it forever.
Absolutely. He's a legend. Okay, I think that's all that we have on the sports front. We're running long, so we got to move quickly through this if we're going to do our top some number of songs of 2018 so far.
Okay, I have three, and I'll go through very quickly with the under-the-radar artists and tracks, okay?
All right.
Do you want to do number three?
Number three. I actually have four, so should
okay,
I start,
you
at
should
four?
Start with number
By
four?
By the way, my honorary number five. Did you hear the Weezer cover of Africa?
I like that song. Oh, my God.
I like the song Africa. So anytime it's back in the news is a good thing for me.
It sounds like a song that should be on like the Silicon Valley soundtrack or something.
You said that. I mean, first off, it's not hardcore rap, so it doesn't sound like that.
Gangster rap.
Exclusively.
It just, it's like so much... we're going fast. I'm not going to talk about it.
All right. My number four was Be Careful by Cardi B, which is my new all-time favorite Cardi B song.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought about, you know, if I would have extended to a number four, you know, I might have had a Cardi B song here. The number four spot was really up for grabs, so I didn't include one.
Look, we got a lot of time to figure out our top 10. We got 6 months.
At number three, I had the song Shooter by Playboi Carti.
Huh.
I've got this long list of kind of under the radar songs, and I've explained this to, I think, on this podcast many times, that basically the only two genres of music that I listen to are artists that don't have agents or managers, like pretty small artists, and mainstream rap music that's played on Cube. Playboi Carti kind of fits in neither of these categories. Because he's not exactly played on Cube, but he is a mainstream rap artist.
Yes.
I'm all about this Playboi Carti album. He's like my favorite new rapper of the last 2 years. Definitely existing in the SoundCloud world. I'm very into him.
I'd have to go listen to that. My number three was, and there's always going to be a Drake song somewhere in my
of
top
course.
List. So I went with God's Plan. That's
God's
my favorite
plan?
Of this year's Drake songs.
Over Nice for What?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
I can't agree with that. Nice for What's like a game changer of a song.
We'll see how I feel in
right.
December.
It would have been number four for me if I included a number four. With the Lauryn Hill sample, it's Woke Drake.
Sure. I don't know. Do I want Woke Drake?
Yes, you. If that's what Woke Drake sounds like, you want Woke Drake.
Fair.
Jesus.
All right, you're number two.
At number two, I went with the song. Have you listened to this? Heaven's Only Wishful by More More.
I have not listened to this.
as a younger artist, could have fit in either of these lists, but I just like the song so much that I wanted to include it. He's a young artist from Toronto, not named Drake.
Is he on OVO?
Who can kind of do everything, right? He writes, he produces, he plays guitar. The song's almost like unclassifiable musically. You know, it sounds almost a little bit like kind of like the funkiness of Spoon from like the early 2000s in a way, but it builds in a great way, and it ends with him and his unique voice at the very end. It's like paved the way for a young artist kind of to have like to pave the way for his future career.
Interesting.
Just the one song.
So we should keep an eye?
Oh, yeah.
All right, my number two, my favorite album of the year, it's not even close, is the Black Panther soundtrack.
Mm.
So my top two are both from the Black Panther.
I thought you definitely would have had This Is America in your top five.
Nah.
Okay.
Not that big of a fan of the actual song. Like, the video is cool. The
song's fine.
Yeah. Number two, The Ways by Khalid with Swae Lee.
All right. Yeah, we've talked about this. It's one of Baby Fantasy Genius's favorite discussions, which is your favorite song on the Black Panther soundtrack.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that, but it's a solid number two. It's a strong number two.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear what your number one is.
Yeah.
My number one is the song Reborn by Kid See Ghost, the Kid Cudi and Kanye West group. You might have heard me talking about this.
I have heard you talking about this.
This is like, to me, the spiritual heir to the song Real Friends, which was my top song of 2016.
Huh. I don't know if I see that.
Kind of just musically, it's like kind of, I want to describe it as like kind of drifty almost. Okay. Like it's a little bit bedroom pop as much as Kanye and Kid Cudi get bedroom pop. And the thing about this combination of artists is Kid Cudi is awful in every single way except when he's singing hooks on songs. And that's what Kid Cudi does on this album a lot. He is the best at hooks since Nate Dogg.
Wow, that's high praise. You know, I went back and was revisiting the Nate Dogg catalog last Saturday.
Oh, the Nate Dogg oeuvre.
Nobody does it better. It's so underrated.
But Kid Cudi, like, you, the Kid Cudi verse, it's like when Kid Cudi is on his own, you're like, oh, don't, Kid Cudi. Just stop when he's writing verses. But when he's singing hooks, you're like, I want more of that. What you're doing right there, Kid Cudi, that's what I want. And that's why this album works in a lot of different places.
It hasn't grabbed me yet. Maybe on another listen it will. I don't know. All right, that was your number one?
Yes.
All right, my number one is mentioned from the Black Panther soundtrack. All the Stars with Kendrick Lamar with SZA.
I haven't heard that one.
you just about that. But I'm stunned that this hasn't become a bigger song. Like, when I first heard this, I'm like, it's going to be the biggest song. And it wasn't it was like big, but it wasn't that big.
What are the standards that you're judging this by?
I don't know. Drake standards, I guess. Playing once an hour, every hour on Cube standard.
It was a little bit pre Cube coming back era. Hold on.
Are you looking where
I'm going to look up YouTube views.
Okay. As many as This Is America.
Well, This Is America was like a YouTube sensation.
It was. It was a visual medium. I don't know what I'm saying here exactly, but
God's Plan is a pretty big song.
The visual component was crucial.
It's kind of a hard one to compare. But let me see here. Okay, so All the Stars had 1.4 million views. Your tiny track there.
I didn't say it was tiny. I just thought it was going to be bigger.
No, it probably is true that it's probably quite a few less than God's Plan by like millions. And God's Plan has 662 million views. Holy shit!
The defense rests.
Oh my god. All right, yeah, I guess I'll give you that one.
Yeah, I really thought that was going to be huge. Like,
that is way too many views.
Like, I listened to that soundtrack came out right before All Star when I was going down to LA, and it was like
it's called All the Stars.
That's terrible. Take that back. Apologize to the listener for that. And I was like, this is good. It's Kendrick Lamar. This is going to be the song of All Star weekend. And it just wasn't. So, you know,
Really, Ape Shit by the Carters has 41 million. How does that song? Oh, no, hold on, I take that back. It has 136 million.
Okay.
That was just how many likes it has. It was 1.4 million. What was God's Plan at?
I think it was either 662. I think it was 662.
So it's still like five times as many. Yes. Six times as many.
It's still a substantially more popular.
All right, I'll give it to you that it's...
It is currently Kendrick's second most played song all time on Spotify after Humble. or at least in the rankings.
Which, with how many listens?
412 million listens.
underground track that you got.
I'm
there.
Not saying it's. I have scoured the internet. God's Plan has twice as many listens on Spotify.
Okay, I just want to put you on something.
It has not been out as long.
I don't know if you've heard it before. California Love. It's a cool song. You know, I just don't know if it's going to have like the staying power. This artist, Tupac, put it out.
I thought it was going to be the... I also may have... Is it Khalid or is it Khalid? I don't know.
Khalid.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. I thought I mispronounced that. I just thought it was going to be on par with that, with the biggest songs of 2018. I don't think it's quite on par with them, as we have demonstrated with the statistics.
All right, fine. The stats proved you right again.
They always do.
So I want to go through a couple of artists who are doing a little bit more like smaller profile things that I've really liked listening to this year. I'm going to do this quickly. And I included artists and songs. So the song CRV by this artist, Kuko.
Okay.
Kuko is an artist from the LA area who puts out, like, I guess you would call it, like, bedroom pop is like the genre du jour in the underground world. Hasn't necessarily like broken through to your Khalid world necessarily. If any bedroom pop artist got the same amount of listens that All the Stars song got, I think they'd be pretty stoked about it.
I do think so as well.
But he's kind of like one of the first generation, one of the earliest artists to put out this music. Have you heard of Kuko?
Nope.
Really, I felt like there's a long time. He had a lot of success, but the songs musically didn't quite reach the same level as the success had. And I feel like CRV is a little bit of a change of direction. Skews a little bit more pop, but I like it a lot. Another artist, this artist, which is a little bit smaller, he's almost like version 2.0 of Kuko. This artist, Victor, with an exclamation point, from Chicago, the song You Got My. And it, like, I think Victor started out as somebody who was really imitating Kuko and now has grown in like 6 months. We're talking like 18-year-olds here. In six months has exceeded almost anything that Kuko has ever done. It's like Michael Jackson influenced.
Less than like an MLS season.
Bedroom pop, but with a real focus on the pop. There's like early Childish Gambino, Michael Jackson in there. It's really good.
I mean, that review makes go on and listen to it. You mentioned there's an exclamation point. Is there an inverted exclamation mark at the start?
Because no.
That would be really in on that.
No, there's not.
Only an all-time quarterback, I think, that exists. I'm just saying.
White people, am I right? another artist, Uno, coming out of Florida. I'm pretty sure Jacksonville, Florida. Are you familiar with this one? The song No Going Back.
I'm familiar with Jacksonville.
It's one of the top 10 swamp cities in Northeast Florida.
No Going Back by an artist from Jacksonville sounds like it's Tom Petty.
I would say visually very different than Tom Petty.
Okay.
This is an artist who was signed by Ishmael Butler to Sub Pop. It took years for his music to really start coming out, but very Tame Impala influenced.
No, I like
The video has him driving around in a car. Like, you know it's happening in a way. You're gonna like this. You're gonna want to listen to that. You're gonna like it instantly. Took me a second to pinpoint exactly what I was like, this sounds so much like something, but I couldn't find it. And then somebody was like, oh, it's a Tame Impala ripoff, and I was like, mind just blown. The song Confirmation by this artist Westerman. Have you heard this one?
No.
Really in the like classic vein of pop music. He's a British pop artist, but like hooks that come very casually and naturally in the song. And then when they hit you, you're like, what just happened? You go back and listen to it over and over and over again. The song The Eye by Empath. This is an artist that I used to work with.
Yes.
And no longer. Influenced, their lead singer is from Ohio and is very influenced by like one of my favorite bands from 2008 called Times New Viking.
I don't remember them.
You don't remember? You know none of this stuff?
Nope.
This is all...
I know Empath.
Well, there you go. There you go.
I see them on Instagram all the time because we follow them. the podcast follows them.
This song is very lo-fi, very noisy, but also like super catchy song, The Eye. And it's helped them take this like noise rock music and expand a little bit wider. And lastly, the song Baby I'm Bleeding by JPEG Mafia.
Uh-huh.
Any idea on this one?
Nope.
JPEG Mafia is a rapper who's making and has been making for years pretty aggressive rap music, kind of in like the Death Grips vein.
I'm sorry, the what? You're just making up words at some point.
I really don't know any. You listen to like KXP sometimes. Do you ever dabble in the Spotify that's not?
Not really.
Okay. Well, anyway. So Post Malone, have you ever heard of him? Here's the song with Ty Dolla Sign. It's pretty hot.
I'll check that out.
Anyway, JPEG Mafia is doing really well. Finally, after putting out like a ton of music, put out this record this last year, which like top to bottom, it's aggressive, but there's hooks, and he produces everything and starting to do really well.
Good for him.
Yeah. I'll tell him about All the Stars, though, and see if he... maybe he can like take Kendrick Lamar's out of support. Anyway, those are some kind of under the radar songs. I'm surprised that you've heard none of these. No. I need to make a top songs of 2018 playlist. Is what you're telling me?
Because then I would listen to that
and share it with you,
and then I would enjoy many of the songs, surely, and then I would tell other people about them and be like, oh, I discovered this person.
I remember
when discovered
that
Black Fly.
People were giving you props. They were like, yeah, Kevin Pelton, he's all about Yeezy.
Wildly undeserved.
I'm back on Spotify now, though.
That's good. That's a good development for me.
Yeah.
On that note,
thanks for listening.
Thanks.